Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high-quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
All right. Well, folks, welcome back to the hour, the one that we expect and anticipate and wait for every month with Dr. Christian Heim. And this is Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Heim, time for mental health, folks. And so we're live on YouTube and Instagram, and this is your live questions. You can actually join the discussion, literally, if you can take the ticker's address there, and you can actually join us if you want, or you can interact with us directly through Instagram or YouTube, and we'll be able to respond. And doctor is here to answer your questions. Again, if it's something that's affecting your mind and or somebody that you love, don't be shy. Let's get it done. We have a lot of stuff. Doctor, welcome to the show. As always, this is an exciting hour for us. So how are you?
Thank you very much, Hurricane. It's always great to be here. Wonderful to be here.
All right. Well, it is like literally, I mean, I always say this, but I mean it. I mean, I look forward to this hour of the month because it also helps me. And I know it helps a lot of people responding to their, questions, because a lot of people may not want to go physically to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist, out there. But, this gives them the opportunity to at least understand a little bit how to deal with the real world or real affairs of things.
Yeah. And I know it may sound strange, but this hour helps me too. Because just because I know stuff doesn't mean that I can get it going in my life. Because just like everybody else, Hurricane, I'm vulnerable. I got my flaws, so I've got to practice it just like everybody else. So I'm happy to be here and listen too.
You know, doctor, just a quick question. I mean, it is a fact in learning, right? The more you do, the more you practice, the more stuff, the more you actually absorb things, and it helps you kind of. Yes. And so it's really true. I mean. Yeah, you're the expert, but it's a reminder of things. And sometimes we get distracted and we forget things. I mean, how many things we've repeated over the last 5 years? And frankly, to me, it's not repeat, it's like reinforcement. So I think for people,
it is. And we all need reinforcements, okay? Because psychiatrists, they get anxiety and depression as well. Their relationships go bust. There's nothing special about us. All that we have is a bit of specialized information that we can share with everybody else, because we're all part of humanity. We're all trying to get through this thing called life, and we're all doing our best. But as you said, we need reinforcements. We need just those little jabs to keep us on track. And that's what this hour per month is, Hurricane.
Well, it is. And so we're going to get started. So I have a variety of questions, and I'm going to start with this one. It's a little bit of an interesting one, but I think it ties in a little bit to the last show we had, and I don't think we were able to get to it, so we'll touch on it right now. So let me put it on the screen, and then we'll talk about it. So, doctor, does religious beliefs affect our psychological process, or the other way around? Our psychological processes determines our religious beliefs. Mike England.
Okay, that's a great question, Mike. Thank you very much for that. So, so as your question also suggests, the bottom line is it's actually a two-way relationship, that our psychological processes affect our religious beliefs, but probably stronger is that our religious beliefs affect our psychological processes. Because what we're finding in psychiatry, the evidence over the last 20 years in particular, is moving towards living out of a value system. Because the thing is that your brain has to believe in what it's doing. It has to believe in a reality to be able to be part of that reality. And everything that comes from that one presupposition that reality exists will become a value system. Huge question, Hurricane, because we're going to go into cultural issues as well. We're all born in a certain area, born to certain parents, born with certain cultural and social expectations, and they all feed into our religious beliefs to begin with. So we inherit some religious beliefs from our culture, and that then feeds into our psychological processes. But it's interesting, the psychological processes start to influence our religious beliefs. So we have evidence, in fact, a study that just came out recently to basically show that your personality style and your coping style, sorry, not your coping style, but your personality style will influence just how strongly religion is in your world. So somebody who tends to be obsessional, somebody who tends to be perfectionistic, tends to have a bit of a moral edge as well. And morality, as you know, is one of the big things in the realm of religion. But Mike, just to sum up your question, religious beliefs actually influence all our psychological processes through the system of beliefs and values, which happen in the brain, which happen in the frontal lobe. In fact, logic is more housed in the left frontal lobe, and our beliefs are housed more in the right frontal lobe. And this is from a study from 2014. And if there is a question about whether we should go with what the logic tells us or what the belief tells us, here's the interesting thing. We all go with our beliefs. That includes scientists. So in other words, belief system, which includes religion, is actually more important to the human brain than logic.
You got a little bit fuzzy there, but I think I heard the answer. The last part. I mean, it got cut off. So, doctor, I mean, it is, religion is big. I mean, obviously, it's a little controversial. Typically, that's not something we like to touch on in general terms. I personally avoid religion and politics because they can be chaotic. But for the purpose of psychology and mental health, I think religion is a big part of life. And it doesn't matter what denomination. I think the world of 8 billion people, maybe 90% of them have a formal, you know, belief system. And even if the ones that don't, they have some sort of a, maybe non-religious, but it is some sort of system of belief of sorts, right? So at the end of the day, it can affect how we behave, how we deliver, how we interact with people, how we see others. I mean, sometimes it could be a problem. We have, you know, seen wars, you know, based on religion. We've seen hate, and, you know, that can be driven from a religious, you know, perspective. Also, we've seen good stuff that comes out of religion. And you and I, we had some brief discussions about, you know, culture, you know, and education and stuff earlier. It's very different, but it's just the human nature. And I think the question is very, you know, amazing, because it's like, to your point, it's a two-way. Which one really does the other one? I mean, is the religion that drives us, or the psychology that drives us? And frankly, it is phenomenal to even comprehend it. I mean, I'm trying to get my mind around it right now.
Well, okay, so this is something that amazingly we've only discovered in the last 30 years. So the dominant thought pattern since René Descartes in the West, idea that I think, therefore I am, which is from around 1642, has given the idea that we are logical people, that we think things through, and then we make decisions, and that's how our psychological thought processes work. But in 1994, there was a book published called Descartes' Error. And this really influenced me as a psychiatrist, because what it showed from this neuroscientist that presupposition was actually wrong. That what it should say is something closer to I think and I feel, therefore I am. And it's the feeling side of it, which includes belief. So if you feel that something fits with your beliefs, then you will do it. If you're asked to do something that doesn't fit with your beliefs and go against your beliefs, then you will decide against it. And this whole process of decision-making in the brain, okay, has been affected by this idea that we are feeling people, and that includes our religious beliefs. And I'm not putting religious beliefs down by saying that they're feelings. What I'm saying is that they are not logical. So in other words, we're finding out that we are not machines, that we are not an intelligent system working on its own. We are also a feeling system. That means that we're persuaded by people around us. We're persuaded by our culture. We're persuaded by ideas. So religion, I'm actually arguing, is stronger than logic in the human brain, because we know that belief is such a driving force in any decision that we make.
Yeah, I'm smiling because, you know, I'm listening to you, but it's amazing, as it is the driver behind everything in everybody's life, in a way, right? So we tend to see it, you know, family-wise, business-wise, sometimes their practices. You know, there's a lot of stuff that's driven through this process. And I love what you said, the idea of we're not machines, because you know, we were talking about AI earlier, right? I mean, AI is pretty intelligent and smart and logical, but the one thing it's never going to feel is the emotions, right? I mean, you know, it's funny. I work with ChatGPT all the time, and so I joke with it, because I have like even one that is almost understand, like it's my personal version, if you want to call it that way. And so I talk about it. So it understands, like, it's like, you know, I'm tired. I can't work anymore. It's like, all right, well, you know what? You go have yourself a nice rest now. I'm like, I'm human. I get tired. You don't. You can stay here for the whole night and it doesn't matter to you. Yeah. So it can, and it laughs actually. So it can understand some of the concepts, but it would never feel the human emotions and the human actually feelings, to your point. I mean, it's just different. I mean, it's one thing to just add logics and algorithms and equations and formulas and figure out, here's what you're going to have. But to get to the level where we are thinking deep, you know, and senses and these things are just beyond, anything else. That's why humans are humans. And I think, we have the animal world, and I don't think they do have feelings and stuff, but I think it's a little different.
Yes, they do. They do. So this all brings up the idea of what human nature actually is. And on the one hand, we were talking about machines, and then you moved to talking about animals. And in a way, that's all really relevant, because an unanswered question is if religiosity is part of human nature. Now, what I mean by that is, yes, it's human nature to come up with a belief system. And even people who do not believe in a spirit life have a belief system, because the idea that God doesn't exist is also a belief. And science actually can't get past that one way or the other. But the thing is, the question actually is, are things like thou shalt not kill, or thou shalt not steal, or thou shalt declare your taxes, and things like that, which are obviously derived from religious precepts, are they innate in humans anyway? Are they there so that we actually know that, if you like, to harm somebody else is the wrong thing to do? Is that innate, or do we learn that through religion? And that hasn't quite been resolved, but the evidence tends to be moving towards it's innate. We know that if we harm other people, that they are actually able to harm us. And for survival reasons, we'd all get on better if we didn't harm each other.
Oh, from your mouth to God's ears, as they say, right? it will be beautiful, right? And I think, I mean, that's our default, right? I mean, I think that's really it. I mean, some people say we have animalistic, side of us. But I don't think that we are, designed to just do bad things. I think we know where, and I think you've covered this a couple of times about how well we are tending to be. Like we like to do good versus bad, but I guess there's some forces that could turn us, you know, upside down.
Yeah, and this was a very important question in psychology where they did a study to show that if all things are equal, that you don't gain more from one outcome or another, people tended to choose to do the good thing, what contributed to other people's good. Now, we can understand that now by saying, okay, that's the empathy in us. That, if you like, is our anterior cingulate gyrus that says that if I can do some good for everybody else, that means the whole of the human species has got a better chance of survival, even by my little decision. So the question is that empathy. Is that something that we have learnt through religious practice? Is it something that we've developed through religious practice? Or is it innate in ourselves so that we will actually move towards a society that would be helpful to each other? We don't have an answer for that.
Well, listen, I mean, this is some kind of work that can help towards that, right? And there's a lot of work out there that can contribute towards changing what that society looks like and the ideal concept, right? I mean, obviously.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's low odor spray paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum spray paints. Now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money
at Menards. So there's a lot of, you know, challenges around us, and there are, you know, some forces that can be against it. But I mean, at the end of the day, I think the default is still us being good to ourselves, right? I mean, very few people want to harm themselves. And technically, you know, we all love ourselves to a degree. I mean, there is, I mean, some potential psychology, you know, that can affect people where they can be suicidal and maybe want to harm themselves. But there's extreme reasons for that. However, the majority will probably not want to get hurt by any means. Even a mosquito bite will, like, you know, I don't want to be that, right? You know, I don't want to get that. So if that's our default, I mean, it's like by design, we just want to be, you know, we can do the same thing and think about other people just like ourselves. I mean, there's other selfishness and stuff. And we talked about a few other, you know, these things, you know, in previous, you know, shows. It is amazing how we operate. And I think, you know, as individuals, we can make a difference into our own lives, our environment. I mean, also, you know, like, let's say family and immediate communities. But then, you know, ideally, it will be for the whole world. So,
okay. And that's true, Hurricane. And I'm going to take this moment to say something that I believe is very important for shows just like this, for people who use the internet. Because, as you know, Hurricane, it's like people want their information packaged in smaller and smaller bites of information. Give me the bottom line really quickly. And that becomes a pressure. And in that pressure, we actually let go of a lot of details. And so in this discussion where we're talking about whether are humans intrinsically good or are humans intrinsically bad, the detailed discussion that we need to have is, okay, what if humans are capable of both and that we hold both in our minds and we can actually decide about this so that we don't come up with rules that actually sound like they solve everything but end up solving nothing because they're not complex enough. So rather than look at left and right, good and bad, right and wrong, if we can sort of just start to nuance that to sort of say, okay, we all have these possibilities and we see it played out in the world. There is good in this world. There is evil in this world. And it comes down to choice. And if there are two things that I want to emphasize, it's one's going back to Aristotle's idea that we need a balance, that we don't go too far in one direction or in the other direction. And the second thing that I like to emphasize, because it's true, we have choice. And sometimes I think as a psychiatrist that bases his practice on science, that science has got this idea that it's all random, that it's all chemicals, that it's all just interactions of molecules and that we don't have real choice. And we know that that is untrue. We know that we make thousands of choices on a day-to-day basis and these choices matter.
All right. Well, you know, I mean, we can keep going with this, you know, but I think we're going to be moving to the next question. But doctor, so thank you so much. I mean, this whole thing with religious beliefs and as a concept is just, you know, I mean, again, we can have a full season just talking about it, right?
You know. Yeah. Okay. So let me tie a few things up for today. Just to say that basically, sure. Any religious belief system, in a way, becomes a system to organize information so that we can make decisions like what is the right thing for me to do in this situation, because that's one of the biggest questions in social psychology, but also in religious thought. How do I know what the right thing to do is? So a belief system, in a way, gives you precepts and principles that you can lean upon to help you make those really difficult decisions.
Well, thank you, Doc. So I did have a question that is powerful. I don't have it right now here. I'll try to come back to it in a minute. So we'll go to the next one, but I'll try to see if the other one I'm able to put it back in the comments, because there's plenty of them already here. But it is a religious, but I think that's a deeper one. It's a little crazier. So, you know, but we'll do it next time. But so the next question, this is going to be an interesting one. It's multiple pieces to it, but here we go. Why do people always feel the need to have a response when you start a conversation, even though at times they have no clue or background on the topic discussed? I find myself sharing information or simply making small talk, and I'm bombarded with responses that are irrelevant, not related to the discussion. Is this some human nature or flaw in some individuals who lack knowledge or maturity? So Candace, on how?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
No. It's all yours, Doc.
Okay. Because Candace, that's a great question. So imagine the situation, all right? You go to a party, you meet a few people. Gosh, do people go to parties these days? I hope they still do, all right? You go to a party, you meet somebody for the first time, and you start talking about something that you're really interested in. Okay, let's say it's the theater and what's going on at the theater at the moment. And yet, all of a sudden, the person who doesn't know anything about what you're talking about will share or sometimes bombard you with their opinions on a topic that you may have some knowledge about, but they don't. Is this human nature? Is this what happens? So the first thing to look at is, yeah, it is actually human nature, because our brains are all designed to organize the universe around itself. Which means that, and this ties into beliefs as well, all of our brains go through life looking at our environment, getting a new piece of information, and every little piece of information that comes in through our eyes, our ears, our touch, anything, goes straight into the brain and it gets processed. And this is how it gets processed. What the brain does, and this happens in the hippocampus where learning happens, it looks at every piece of information and first of all, it will decide whether to reject it or accept it. And to do that, the hippocampus will talk to the prefrontal cortex and say, what do we know about this already? And it'll decide whether it fits into our belief system or not. And if it doesn't fit into our belief system or our belief of reality, it's like it gets pushed away. But let's say the person knows that theater exists, they're interested in the theater, and they've been to the theater once. Well, that's what the brain is going to look at straight away, that one experience. And it's like, because that becomes a very intoxicating experience. Oh yeah, I love the theater. I know what you're talking about. I'm comparing what you're talking about to my one experience of going to the theater, and this is what my brain came up with. And so we will all get an urge to blurt out things that are happening in our mind. And Candace's question also went to the idea of maturity. The idea of maturity is to know that this is the kind of thing that goes on when you're talking to somebody new. You just listen for a while before they've made a point, and then you a bit more gently bring in what you know or you don't know about it. Because it is actually human nature for us to be able to learn from absolutely everybody. But to get to that stage of human nature, we need the maturity to say, you know what, I don't know too much about theater, okay? could you please enlighten me on it? And when you do that, then you get two more mature human beings sharing and learning from each other. Great question, Candace.
Well, you know, doctor, it's funny because this is something I've experienced myself. Now, you know, I've been in, I was a tour guide. I've been in sales all my life, you know, networking and all stuff, now in the media. And you know, I do, and by the way, in personal life too, like you're in a gathering, a group, and, you know, you're having two people having a discussion, a third party is listening, and they might not have anything to do with your expertise, whatever you're talking about, but they seem to have an opinion, an idea, whatever it is. And they throw in stuff. And sometimes, I mean, it does look weird sometimes when someone just jumps out of left field and just try to get into the discussion. You know, so like I'm personally, this is just me. One of my practices is very simple. If we're having a discussion and I don't have a clue about stuff, I will just listen, absorb as much as I can. Unless you ask me a question, I'm probably not going to say it. Then, by the way, this is something I've done even in business. Like especially in my early days, I would go into meetings. And some of the higher ups, you know, they'll be talking stuff and I'm like, oh, this is beyond my pay grade here. So I would be listening and absorbing. So what I do, I go do my research the night after and kind of do all my due diligence to be prepared. So next time we have a discussion, I become a little bit of more an expert on that. So that was my thing. And the other concept of my principle is very simple. If I am not going to contribute and I have nothing really positive to add to the discussion or maybe something of value, I might just, you know, shy away from that. Now, listen, I'm a talkative guy. I mean, I will chirp up, you know, in a conversation, providing I am in a discussion that I can handle, right? And, you know, that's the other thing. We're not experts in everything. This is something that I've experienced also in the media because, you know, I have different shows that, you know, that I do, right? And so there are topics that are beyond me, literally. I mean, I'm being clear about it. You know, I get experts that are like, you know, they're really the experts. But my thing, so the way I do it is, you know, the whole purpose is to learn. So I actually ask genuine questions based on me wanting to learn whatever, you know, from that expertise. And that's actually given me that knowledge that I accumulate over time. And so that's all. So I'm actually really asking questions to help. And then I'm thinking about all the possible questions that someone else in my shoes will be actually asking in the public audience, right? So that's it. So those are things. But there are people sometimes that, and I want to say this, that can come across maybe annoying or completely, you know, disrespectful to jump in the discussion. And it can, and especially if they have, and by the way, sometimes it is not a good outcome for them because they almost, you know, like really, really look bad, you know, and that can affect them because somebody can be, let's say you and I probably, if we were in that discussion, we'll probably be delicate about how we will reject that discussion or get them in. But there are people that will be like so blunt and different, like, what the hell are you saying? You have no clue. You're dumb, whatever. You know, and you get that. And it could be very hurtful, right? So it's a critical, you know, point of discussion. I think a lot of people are experiencing. And we see this also on social media. I mean, because, you know, like give me 1 second. I go on some of the stuff and you get these comments. I mean, like, bro, I mean, why are you even commenting? You have no, like, the topic is on the left or the right, and this guy's completely, like, the other side. I mean, like, we're playing football, and he's playing volleyball. I mean, it's like, you know, what the hell? You know, like, it's not even a relevant comment, but people tend to, I just want to chime in. Like, for what? I mean, so there is a plus and a minus to this, and so it's a powerful question, doctor. So, sorry, go ahead.
No. It's a very powerful question, and the things that you said are very relevant. So, I'll pick up on the last point that you just said. It's sort of like, what the hell? Why do you chime in with your uninformed opinion? And quite frankly, I'm all like that, okay? I tend to chime in. I tend to give an opinion, not a judgmental opinion, but I want to be part of the conversation because it's part of my nature to join in with other people, all right? To sort of say, yeah, I'm part of it. Let's actually talk about this. So there are a few things to Candace's question that I want to talk about. And the first thing is that everybody has an opinion, right? If they've been to the theater just once, you will have an opinion on the theater. The difference is who shares that opinion and who doesn't share that opinion. And as you said, Hurricane, we don't share all that's going on up there because we don't. And a lot of that is culturally informed as well. There are some cultures that will just leave people their independence, and that's good. And then there are some cultures that'll say, hey, the two of us, we're actually together in this, aren't we? And that's more on the side that I am. So I tend to be more direct and more sharing with opinions, where other people will just hang back a bit more. And then you brought in the idea of listening, because to learn from somebody else, you got to shut up and you've got to listen, all right? And then you can start taking to the take the conversation to a higher level. And this brings in Candace's question about maturity. When you're meeting somebody for the first time, we're not just working out what the conversation is or what we know or what we don't know. We're actually working out, how do we share the conversation? How do I share information? Do I feel safe with this person? Is this somebody who I can unite with just a bit quicker? Or is this somebody that I've got to give a bit of space to? And all of us are actually doing it. And here's the thing. There's actually no right or wrong answer about that. We will all end up with, if you like, a different opinion about how to share information and how much to leave some independence and how much to say, nah, let's go in there and show that we can be buddies.
Yeah, like I'm listening to you, right? That's just something. Sometimes I get funny like this, but I thought about, you know, the expressions that we have about opinions, right? There are some of them that are extreme, like they're a dime a dozen, or they're like, you know, everybody has one. You know, yeah. I'm not even gonna go there. I would have to bleep that one. So, but the fact is, you know, it's amazing. I mean, I know, like, sometimes people have this I guess false. Like, I don't know if it's a false or real, but the idea of entitlement to be part of the discussion, even if they're not welcomed into the discussion, right? Or like, you know, it's my freedom of speech, or, you know, I'm entitled to speak up and say my you know speak my brains out. But yes. is that really a necessary thing? I mean, do we have to do it? Now, by the way, I share with you similar stuff. I mean, if we are in a conversation, I mean, you know, sometimes you always have
to unlock big savings and add style and security to your home with high-quality Schlage door locks from Menards. Whether you're looking for a traditional interior lock or a Wi-Fi compatible electronic lock, Menards has you covered. With more than 200 options of Schlage door locks in stock, save big on all door locks. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Urge, like, you know, you have they touch on something that you might know, you want to give in a little bit of a piece. But, you know, so the way I do it, just personally, is I kind of do it in a very simple way. I offer a little bit of an idea as a suggestion, and that's it. I keep it that and see where it goes. If it gets a little help and, you know, pulled in, you know, I get into the discussion. If not, it's like, well, just sharing, you know, maybe there's a potential here or a perspective here, whatever. And I give them that as just a, you know, a little bit of a hint, and then I get the feel of the discussion. Am I going in? Am I going out? So that's kind of like my trick. So,
yeah. Okay. So let's take two extremes. Let's go to a party, and the topic of conversation has become trees. All right. Now I've just chosen that out of the blue, but at the party, there's one person who's feeling really left out because they don't know anything about trees. Right. The conversation's gone into a taxonomy area of how to classify trees, and this person feels totally left behind. And the conversation has gone on for half an hour, and this person hasn't said a thing. And what happens is, human nature is that somebody will notice this and say, "What's your favorite tree? What do you like?" And they will bring them into the conversation because we all want to be part of it, okay? But let's take the other extreme, where there's one person who knows everything about trees and they're just talking about trees all the time, and everybody else is shut up because this person is dominating conversation. What will happen, and I've seen this happen, and I'm sure that you and other people have as well, other people in that group will start asking each other questions. Well, what's your opinion of trees? And they will start spreading the conversation around, because when we end up in a group, ideally we want everybody to be part of it, and we don't want anybody to dominate. Now, in actual society, we all tend to dominate where we've got areas of expertise, but there are some places where we want nobody to dominate. We just want to have fun, all right? And this is where maturity comes in. This is where at a party you can do exactly what you're talking about, Hurricane, listening when you don't know, but also sharing your opinion when you want to be a part of it, because that's what's actually going on. Humans are social creatures. We want to be part of the herd, but we all want to be free in that herd. And so that's the argy-bargy that goes on. And you see it on social media as well, okay? Some people will share all their opinions, okay? And some people will say too much, and some people won't say enough. And that's the science of human relationships.
Well, thank you, Doctor. By the way, we had a little bit of a connection, you know, distortion, but you know, I think that we got the point, you know, and your insights there. But here's the thing. So just the idea is that, you know, it is our human, you know, mind, and it's, we have to be able to allow other people to interact and not dominate a discussion, of course. But and by the way, there's always someone that can take over the conversation, and, you know, and you know, I mean, I used to make that mistake myself. So I can say that, you know, I like to talk, and then I'm just gonna take over, and then I realize, you know, that nobody cares. You know, sometimes, you know, you just have to, like, you know, take a chill pill, you know.
Well, I have to learn your secret, Hurricane, because I'm still making that mistake.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, you get carried away, right? Especially if it depends on the topic. But here's the challenge, right? You know, like, if I get with a bunch of NASA experts, right, and I just happen to meet them, I mean, they're talking about space and, you know, I don't know, whatever, you know, propulsion and all the stuff. I mean, I might know something about something. I mean, I love that world, right? But these guys are like all the PhDs of the best of the best in the, you know, in that field. I mean, I may not contribute much about that discussion. I may be, you know, inquisitive and ask questions to learn. That would be nice. But you'll find that example in a lot of areas where someone has no expertise comes in and throws in some sort of an opinion that's completely off. You know, it's not even, you know, relevant to the discussion just because they want to be part of it. Now what? How can we, you know, address that sometimes without offending people? I think that's just a question I have for audiences. I'm sure, you know, people are experiencing this because it happens at work. It happens, you know, in meetings. It happens in a lot of areas. Like, you know, listen, I had someone one time, a boss or higher, a hierarchy figure in the company, where you will get cut off. You know, like, let's say you're the one doing a presentation, yeah, but you will get cut off in the middle of the discussion. Like, You're there, but it is disturbing when you actually cannot finish up, for example, your thoughts, or you're already in the flow and someone keeps interrupting. It is bad, right? You know, so there's a lot of ways. There's like an etiquette, you know, in how you interact with a group when there's a discussion going on and there's more, you know, even meetings. Sometimes people are just shouting over each other, and you know, it's like we're not going anywhere, and everybody's talking like, folks, hello, time out. You know, we need to kind of like stay tuned on our discussion topic here. Let's not veer out or whatever. So sometimes somebody has to act as the referee in the discussion.
Yeah. So in that situation, so firstly, you're talking about a situation that sometimes needs leadership. And there are different styles of leadership, and there are different ways of doing leadership. And in that situation, a leader needs to take control and keep things on track. But I want to talk about the other discussion. I'm going to go back to a party where these things are happening. Somebody's dominating conversation at a party. And you get people from, let's say, diverse backgrounds, diverse ages. And how do we find a way of keeping together? I've actually got an acronym that I'm going to share here because it actually helps. It's just A, B, C, D, and E, all right? And the A is just to accept everybody, okay? And what that'll do is, if there's somebody who's really annoying you because they're dominating conversation, if you just go, okay, this is somebody who just likes to talk about it, I'll just accept it, is you will begin to calm down. So the A in the acronym A, B, C, D, E of handling diversity is just to accept a person. The B is to build bridges. Find something that this person who's talking all the time has said and say, yeah, I see what you mean. I feel that too. And if you can build that bridge, that's really what they want. Then all of a sudden they're feeling part of it. The C is to find common ground. Because if we talk about things that are common to all of us, like trees, then we've all got something to say. However, in contrast, the D is to dare to be different. Sometimes you got to be yourself. Sometimes you got to put yourself out there or an idea and you can be different. But ideally, and this happens in big cities like New York and London and Paris, you want to enter an expectation-free zone where you actually allow people to be who they are and you celebrate that. So accept, build a bridge, find common ground, dare to be different, but enter the expectation-free ground, free zone, so that all of us can be who we actually are together.
And that's exactly what this show is about. Those are the things. Those are the little tips that, you know, if you're listening or watching, you know, today or anytime, you know, this is evergreen. You know, this is the stuff that you can use on your journey of life to help you and guide you through these processes. Because, I mean, we are all struggling with different things in our lives, and we come across these things. And I love this acronym because, really, if I'm listening to you, it makes sense. I mean, if you apply it all, you should be able to kind of maneuver any type of discussion, any type of group, you know, because you can be within, you know, the parameters, you can adjust things accordingly, and you can certainly, you know, have a positive outcome and positive impact in that discussion, even if you're not really the one that has the expertise or the other way around. I mean, you can really manage it well. So, you know, again, if you're listening, folks, A, B, C, D, E, that's it.
but Hurricane, just because it's an acronym doesn't mean that it's easy to do. It's actually really hard because let's just take somebody that you meet for the first time. You're just going to be making judgments about them left, right, and center. You're going to judge whether you like their hairstyle, their clothing, their age, their looks, their tone of voice, everything. We all make these judgments. So just to get to the A, to accept the person just the way they are and what they're saying, means that you've got to overcome all these opinions that go on in your mind. And that's the maturity, the place that says, I'm just going to shelve all these opinions for a while just to accept this person so I can then build a bridge, find some common ground, then I can dare to be different. And maybe we can enter this expectation-free zone so we can allow each other to be who we are, but still stay together. And that's the bottom line of trying to get on with humans, right? You want to be attached with somebody, but you want to be your authentic self as well. And they want to be their authentic self. It's just that being authentic selves can sometimes lead to clashes.
Well, doctor, I mean, I thank you. And you're right. And obviously, I made it sound like it's an E, like a pick, like a walk.
Oh, no, you didn't, Hurricane. But it's just that sometimes I think that by putting something in an acronym, you sort of go, oh, that's easy. We'll just do this, right?
Well, but it's really hard to do. Well, it's going to take practice like everything else, right?
Yeah.
But certainly it's a technique to practice on and on, you know, over and over. Eventually you become, you know, you get some mastery to it and you can handle. And by the way, I think the idea of acceptance is something that we should all kind of take as just a rule. Because nobody knows, you know, what the other people are going through, life, this, that, right, the other, their yes, background. We judge, again, the expression judging the book by its cover. It's very common. Unfortunately, as a matter of fact, the question that we're gonna talk about next is got probably gonna touch on this anyway. So it's gonna be a good segue there. But the idea of really acceptance is, listen, you are who you are, you know, and I don't, like, firstly, listen, I have conversations from kids to, you know, the elderliest, you know, person, you know, in a crowd. I have no problem with, you know, levels and stuff like that. But there are, you know, I've actually come across people who actually would design the discussion based on your background. And they will ask you, like, what kind of education do you have? Or, like, they try to dive in and dig in to see, like, what level are you in knowledge and skills to be able to conversate at your level. You know, I mean, I've had people that really would literally, you know, poke in to figure out, what's your level in the IQ business, right? And then they kind of work their way around that. You know, I mean, to me, that's a little too extreme, but it is a style. Some people would gauge you based on your, and that's the other thing. I think there's a big mistake between education and knowledge and intellect. I think education, you know, is the formal education that we know. Everybody can go to that. Doesn't make them very, you know, intellectual, or doesn't make people very, you know, knowledgeable, skilled, right? So it all depends. I mean, you can go through a process and just, you know, pass your exams and stuff and you got nothing in the mind, But there are people that have not even gone to school, and they can be extremely intelligent and highly, knowledgeable because they read, they learn, they search, they do stuff. They just haven't had the formal education system, if you want to call it. So it is. That's the thing. That's where, you know, I'm talking about the acceptance. You can't judge people based on those gimmicks. And, you know, like I remember a professor of mine a long time ago. Literally, I'm aging myself, but hey, you know, it's been a minute. He did say this, like, you know. A degree is a degree. Have a degree just in case, you know, but that doesn't make you who you are and your knowledge and your skills and your capabilities. But it is a societal, piece of document that has been almost designed to give you access to certain things, because people will actually want that piece of paper to determine your viability, because that's how they get sorted out. I mean, someone with a degree versus someone not a degree, there's a good chance the one with the degree will probably prevail in a job interview, for example, or at least access to a job. So these are the things. So that's it. But that doesn't mean that that person is any less intellectual or knowledgeable because of no paper, you know, that was given to him. You know, so again, you and I, we talked about education, you know, earlier. There's a lot of nuances there. But I think it is still connected to the same discussion we have in the idea of judging and accepting people. To me, you know, I talk to people, doesn't matter who they are. And based on how the conversation goes, I can scale it up, scale it down. I mean, you tweak. Now, it takes time. I mean, obviously, I've been in sales all my life. And so sales is psychology to a degree. There's a lot of personal touch and stuff. So you get to gauge people and see where they are. I don't have to always go one way or the other, you know. And even if you can, you don't have to. I mean, some people flex their knowledge and skills like, oh, I got this. You don't have to, you know, there's no reason for that. So this is a, you know, an important piece of who we are, I think, as humans. And sometimes you can be very offensive to people because they look like, you know, you undermine them. And sometimes you can say it wrong, like, well, what do you know about this? You just, you know, and like, are you calling me an idiot? You know? So, yeah. So go ahead, doctor.
Oh, no, that's exactly right what you're saying, Hurricane, because all of those things that you talked about, so you talked about knowledge, education, and intelligence. Well, all of that is creating a hierarchy, because we know that there is a hierarchy in intelligence, for example. Just like there's a hierarchy in physical attractiveness, there's a hierarchy in emotional sensitivity, and we all fall somewhere on that hierarchy. But as human beings, okay, we're all of equal worth. We all are unique human beings with something to share with each other. And if we're compassionate about that, and if we're accepting about that, and again, I'm at the party situation, knowing that when you're with a group of people that you've met for the first time, everybody, including yourself, wants that acceptance. And we can play these hierarchy games, but that's fine if we're going to get things done in life. But part of living is having a party. And having a party means getting on with other people and having fun. And that's seeing each other's intrinsical worth.
Well, thank you, Doc. I think the word of the day today is having a party. So we're going to have a lot of parties. But, you know,
well, the world isn't much of a party these days, okay? So, whereas having parties is actually a very important human activity. It shows that we accept each other, Hurricane. You know?
Well, let me be specific. I don't think Doctor has alluded to the idea of having parties and drinking up the kazoo and doing all that stuff. It's more gathering socially and enjoying your life. Now, of course, if you have a little bit of, you know, entertainment, other stuff, that's your gig, that's prerogative. But the idea is really it's a socializing, the real socializing, not in social media.
The real socializing. That's right.
I think, but you're right. I mean, we've lost that. I mean, it's a sad statement. You might find some of it still, but even in social settings now, you have people that are on their phones and trying to, you know, I mean, like my wife and I were just having, a ball the other day. We're just watching something, and I'm like, everybody, there was a wedding, right? And everybody was on their phone, you know, recording the wedding. No one was enjoying the wedding themselves. They were just, you know, having a phone. They were just cameramen and women, you know, taking, you know, the video. That's what the videographer is about. Like, right? There's somebody that's working the camera to take those videos so they can share them with the family. Now, everybody's just, you know, showing this. I mean, what's the point? They're not even in, like, you go to concerts, everybody's on their phone. I mean, like, you're going to see the actual act or whatever it is on the stage, as opposed to like you want to record it so you can watch it later. I'm sure you can find it on YouTube somewhere, you know. So it's kind of weird how we did. So thank you. I mean, for the re-emphasis today on the idea of partying and social, you know, gathering and really being human. And really, I think the more we do that, the more we can do the ABCD better.
That's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And unfortunately, because of social media, we're losing the ABCDE skills because we're interacting more with machines and screens rather than human beings, right? So there's a bit of a mouthful, but it's kind of a lesson that I learned from somebody that I took care of once who was not going to be with us terribly much longer. And I sort of asked, is there anything that you want us to remember? And he said, yep, don't miss out on a party. Don't miss out on people because time is limited and there is time enough to still have some fun and share in this life.
That's powerful. And by the way, that, you know, I've kind of heard the same, you know, with different discussions and different shows about the regret of people that are, you know, terminal or like, you know, in their last, you know, days, is that they sometimes regret the things that they missed on in social, you know, and doing things to, with their loved ones and so forth. So, I mean, people, we got to enjoy our lives. Let's be more social. Let's interact better. There's a lot of nature out there. There's a lot of stuff. Let's gather, you know, and I love you and I, we've talked about this many, many times, and you've shared a lot of techniques about phones and, you know, off the table at, you know, at home and different things and how to do this. And folks, again, we can do that. I mean, we don't have to be, you know, slaves to a device. I mean, we can actually put the device away. And it's not difficult, but it is an addiction. And I know you are working diligently to change a little bit of that and educate people more about how to kind of work this addiction in a better way. Because, I mean, it is one of the craziest and a very addictive one. I mean, it's just as bad as any other drug.
Yeah, and in fact, we're starting to get a few winds in the world in this hurricane because a large study just came out. Oh, I believe it was 27,000 students in the Netherlands, in Holland. And what they did was that they banned smartphones from school, and academic performance is up, attention is up. But the most significant thing is the kids were enjoying themselves more. Right. So enjoying each other as human beings was up simply because schools in a whole country said no more smartphones so people can enjoy each other.
Well, speaking of which, Doc, I know a couple of shows back you talked about, you know, the new legislation in Australia about, you know, the age limit for social media. Is that coming on, you know, anytime soon? I mean, what's the update on that?
Yeah. Yeah, so that legislation has actually been passed and it's due to start next year. And there are just more and more countries in the world that are finding that the evidence is too strong. We've got to start legislating to protect our children so that they can actually enjoy life. So yes, Hurricane, that's moving forward.
Well, I'm all supportive for that, you know. But again, here's funny. I mean, we are on social media right now. We are, you know, trying to get information. Obviously, we want people to watch this and listen to it. But by the way, The good news is we're also on radio. We're also on podcast. So you don't have to be on a device watching us. You can just listen to us.
yeah. So I'm going to tie this into something else that we were talking about earlier, how it's not all or nothing. So yes, I do spend a lot of time speaking about how life could be improved without social media. And guess what? I do that on social media. But that doesn't mean that I'm a hypocrite. It means that the whole idea of social media is it's a balance. We've got to find the right balance between using it as a tool for good, which is what I believe that the iHealth Network does, Hurricane, and overusing it for entertainment and actually getting into some very deep and dark places. That includes cyberbullying, which is a very dark place. So again, it's the idea of balance. Social media is there. Let's use it for the right reasons. Let's try to make the right choices.
Well, thank you. And doctor, I think balance in everything is really the key, and that should be the target for everyone that's out there, you know, in this world, right? We can't go one extreme versus the other. I think finding always a middle ground is usually the better, in a way, because you're in the middle, you can gauge things better and engage. And you're right. I mean, social media is not all bad or all good. I mean, there's great stuff. I mean, you know, educational stuff, informational stuff. However, you know, it can be very destructive and depends on what's driving someone. They can completely just be wasting hours. I mean, again, we talked about time before. You know, your time, folks, is valuable, and the clock is ticking, and you don't know how much more you have of life. You know, so sometimes just scrolling, like, and that's always an excuse, and, you know, oh, I don't have time. And we spend a lot of time, you know, just doing stuff and just going over nonsense. And that's the other thing. Or even commenting when I don't have to go and spend time to type in for, a topic that I'm not even interested in, just because I want to give somebody, you know, a little bit of bullying, right? So...
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And it's always finding that balance, Hurricane.
All right, thank you. So Doc, we have a few more, about 10 minutes, close to 10, so 8 minutes. We have another question here that's probably relevant to today's society. So I'm going to just put it on the screen here. And it's three pieces of it. Yeah, so let's do this. All right. Why do humans compete showing off material fluff, accessories such as cars, bags, gold watches? Do they need to be validated? Both rich and poor, the rich shows off, the poor mimics, even if they can't afford it, I'm assuming. Yep. These same things. And why do businesses explore this in their strategies? Is this a psychological need, an urge that is innate in human nature? If it is, can people control it and how? Janet, Texas. All right, that's a mouthful.
Wow, Janet, that is a wonderful question. It actually gets down to the way our society works, Hurricane, and there's a lot in it that speaks about human nature. There's a lot in it that speaks about human needs, and I'm going to talk about human needs as a part of this. But it also talks about some of the downside of our society, which includes exploitation. So, Janet, the first thing that you asked was, do people have a need to show off? And I hate to put it glibly, but in a way, the answer is yeah, okay, because we all crave some sort of significance. As much as I emphasize that we all like to have fun and have parties and to be part of the herd, all of us need to leave our mark, need to do something significant so that the world knew that we were here. And particularly in a world of increasing population and we're becoming so aware of each other, it does come down to handbags and shoes and watches to make it look like I have achieved something that's worthwhile. So this idea of status and the need for status and significance is well alive in all of us. But the way around that, Janet, is to take that need of significance and say, what is significance to me? So in other words, going back to your beliefs and values and what you value in life. Because if you go and spend all your money on handbags and shoes and watches, but you haven't had the education that you want, or you weren't part of the family that you wanted to be, or you didn't just achieve by developing one little gift that you had, then you won't actually get to that satisfaction, because the significance comes from developing something inside yourself and sharing it with other people. So the second part of Janet's question talked about this need being exploited. And yes, it is, because democracy it's a pretty bad economical system, I've got to say, Hurricane. But it's the best that we've ever come across. So the only reason that we don't go with anything else is because we haven't found anything better. And part of democracy is to people being able to get out there and make some money however they want. And that includes manipulating the needs of human beings. So your need for significance will be manipulated by people who want to sell you watches and handbags. But if you can be aware of that, this becomes part of the maturity so that you can make choices that are in your own best interests. Thank you for that question, Bennett.
Well, so doctor, because this is a big question, right? I mean, there are people that are living outside of their means to show off. I mean, to show off, really. I mean, there are people that really do show off. They just want, like, I got this. I've arrived, right? I got, whatever, because the society has dictated that. But there are people that actually, I'm sorry, hold on. I'm not sure what happened here. Technical difficulties, huh?
That's right. You've left us in the dark, Hurricane.
All right, I'm back. All right. All right. So I was saying the idea of just like doing it for reasons that are not really satisfying, right? It's really for the others, just to say, to claim that I got this, but I don't have the means. I'm suffering. I'm just sacrificing all kind of important stuff, as you said, education, whatever it is that makes your life healthier and happier, in a way just that, that is not relevant, right? Now, it's like validity. Like, I'm being, like, if I wear a certain, bag or a certain, signature logo, right? It makes me like look better. And people are emphasizing on this and they're pushing this. I mean, I see it in marketing big time. I mean, you see it on social media. I mean, it's all about brands and it's all about, by the way, I'm not against anything. As you know, capitalism is okay. Being able to make a profit is okay. I'm not against all that. However, it's how we do it. And then you said the maturity piece is the ability for me to gauge things, to be able to do it for the right reasons for me. So if I wear something, it's because I want it, not because I want to show off to other people, not because I want to be like given a status. The status is what you give to yourself. I mean, this is something I used to do in trainings, and we see this, like, with the discussion boss versus manager, for example, right? You're already you have the job, you have the actual role. Why do you always have to feel the need that you want to prove that you are the boss, right? It's the default, right? It's the same thing. Like, if I'm going to do something, it's got to be because I want it. It's my signature. And, it's funny because there is this contrast. We see this, if you look at some of the more affluent people, and I'm talking about like richer people, financially, some of the world richest people, you don't see them, walking around with a lot of, clothes with logos on them. There may be more simple clothing than you think. I mean, their average, I guess get up would be, $100 versus someone who may not be making, the money yet is wearing $1,000 worth of things, and the clothing. I mean, it could have a watch that can be, thousands of dollars, right? Or a bag that is $10,000 minimum and you can't even get, or like sandals. I mean, there's stuff that sometimes I can't get my head around it personally. It's just too much. But again, I get it. It's a choice. People want to look good. You look good for yourself, but is it, I'm doing it for people or I'm doing it for me? I think that's really my debacle is about that. It's like, what are you doing it for? Who are you doing it for?
Yeah, so I'm going to tie this back into significance, because let's take a gold watch. Now, you could actually take your credit card and mount a big debt because you want to have this gold watch, because this gold watch looks fantastic and you feel good when you wear the gold watch. But if at the end of, let's say, 3 years of college or university, your parents buy you a gold watch to say, well done, let's celebrate you getting this degree, that gold watch could be a lot less, as far as a watch is actually concerned, less expensive, not a designer brand, but the significance of the watch becomes greater, because you look at that watch and you say, my parents got that for when I graduated. So it has to do with that significance, trying to get it in an artificial way, or try to get it through the means of money straight away, or for there to be some emotional and educational significance put on that watch. And the thing is about democratic capitalism is that it makes you feel that you can be part of whatever it is that you need to be a part of, simply by buying the watch. And this is where the manipulation can come in, because all of us human beings, we want to feel good. And the message that I want to give to people is, if you can make yourself feel good after you've done something significant. So in other words, get the pleasure after you've done something of purpose and link the two together, so that when you achieve something, you can then go on a splurge and reward yourself with something. that will give you more significance than going for the reward straight away.
Well, Doctor, thank you. Well, here's the other thing. I mean, I love that the word significance, because it has to mean to have a good meaning to you, right? And that's the truth. And but I mean, here's the thing, right? I mean, someone can argue a watch, right? You can buy a watch for $20 and it's going to tell you the same time as a Rolex that's $60,000, right? You know, so it all depends on how you see it. Now, if that is what makes you and fulfills, and you can afford it, why not? I mean, the other thing is value, right? Everybody has different values of what they value in terms of like material things, right? And by the way, there's also an investment concept, right? Do you buy things that can have depreciation value, or you want to buy things that have no value, you can't even resell, right? A lot of these things are actually, you know, really they lose value the minute you walk out. Even like, you know, big cars or like expensive cars, right? You know, you're one, you're two, you're three. You're just depreciating rapidly. I don't care. It's a Bentley, Rolls-Royce, and any of those, you know, brands. And I mean, again, they're beautiful cars. I love them. Don't get me wrong. But the idea is, you know, if you're shopping, for example, do you want to buy a brand new one, or you want? But of course, if you have $1 billion, or you're in the billionaire league, or the top millionaire league, you know, then those are like toys that you can afford easily without a problem. But I'm talking about your average person, based on the question. You know, the average person, I mean, in the U.S., I think they just finally have, you know, the average American household income, I think it's about $62,000 right now, or $63,000. You know, that's not a lot. After taxes, you're left with nothing. And, you know, I mean, you tax on everything, on your property, on your food, on this, on that. So I mean, can you really afford those things? And some people put credit cards to buy these things. And listen, I made that same mistake, you know, myself. So I know, I'm talking about it from my personal experience. You know, there were like things that I've done, I bought that I'm like, did I really have to do that? No, I didn't. And I did it for the wrong reason sometimes. And so, you know, then I realized like, I got to do it for the right reason. So when I bought something that I wanted, then that's different. I wanted it. My wife wanted it. We needed it. It was something that we valued, as you said, significant to us. Great. And that's the thing, like a watch that could be $10 can mean anything to you, because it's to your point, it's your dad, your you know, loved ones, somebody that left you that piece. And it's not so much that the watch, it's just the significance, the value that you have for that piece. So it changes things. So it is a very difficult topic, and I think we can spend an hour on this, but it is society today. And you're right, the manipulation is happening.
Yeah, it is. So I'm going to tie the psychology with the economics of the situation, because when we talk about needs, then we go to a psychologist from Columbia whose name is Abraham Maslow, who came up with a hierarchy of needs. So level one, we've got to have food and shelter. Level two, we have to have a safe society. Level three, we have to have people that we love and get on with. Level four, we've got to start doing things that are creative in ourselves. And level five is when we reach that idea of significance, okay? But the economics is a little bit different, because in the early 1900s, the economic theorist by the name of Maynard Keynes said what we need to do is to fulfill people's needs. And that's what is the beauty of democratic capitalism, is that we've been able to fulfill people's needs. And in the last 25 years, I believe we have taken about 1.5 billion people out of extreme poverty. And that's fantastic. And that is building needs. But in advanced societies like the USA, all of our needs are actually fulfilled. And so what happens is that marketing psychologists start to look at what needs could be fulfilled and induce these needs ourselves. So in other words, nobody actually needs watches. We don't need watches that cost $5,000 rather than $50. But if we can create this idea that you're more significant by wearing an expensive watch, then that becomes a need to become fulfilled. We didn't need that 100 years ago. We wouldn't have thought about it. But that's part of economics. And marketing psychologists will actually use this in us. So what I'd encourage people out there to do is look at what you actually need, look at what you actually want, and make sure that you're not being manipulated. Because here's the really interesting thing, Hurricane. Once you get to the multi-million dollar and even billion dollar status, what a lot of those people do is they go, you know what, I'm going to find a cause where I can use my money to help other people. And so they start putting together foundations. They start trying to solve some of the world's problems, and their significance comes from more altruistic needs rather than buying a watch. And we can actually skip to that straight away by seeing, what do I have as a gift inside me that I can actually contribute to all of this society to make the world a better place just a little bit? And all of that gets done one decision at a time.
Well, thank you, Doug. So a couple of things before we close up. I mean, one is that I have seen this. I mean, there are people that they gauge you. They literally clock you up and down and see like what your look like, you know, and what you're wearing and stuff like that, and how much you're, and then they can determine whether that you're worth the discussion or not, or they can determine whether you're, you know, stuff. Now, ultimately, that's a mistake, because some people could be very well, you know, well off, and they still don't subscribe to that, you know, language of, you know, you need to be showing off. And therefore, you may be, you know, misled with that. That's like what we talked about earlier about that judging the book by its cover, you know. And some people would, and by the way, this is not, I don't think it's just this century. I mean, we know historically, you know, the elite, right? You know, they've always, you know, dressed up different. They wanted stuff, longer dress. They had, you know, the shiny stuff, the gold, you know, it, you know, even they spoke different language. I mean, in the aristocracy of England, right? French was the language, because they, you know, they didn't want to speak the same as the, you know, the population. They said they had to be a little bit different. So we, and by the way, even in different cultures, even my own culture, sometimes we have that. So people who speak more French, for example, are perceived to be more educated and you know, maybe well off versus the people that may not be able to speak French. And that's just something that happened over time, you know, because of colony time and people that were able to actually get a better education in the French system. So they were able to capture that. So it's not necessarily the truth, but there is some validity to that, right? So there's a lot of stuff. So it's very, you know, funny how it all operates. And but sometimes it can be offensive to people, or actually some people can feel undermined, you know, because, or insulted. If you're really looking at me, that's a shallow look at me, right? You're not looking, you know, because you can talk to someone, and we've seen this. Someone could have had the best life. They went through a bad time, a bad, you know, whatever it is, life, and now they may be homeless and they're just going through a bad patch, right? That doesn't make them any less valuable or intelligent or smart or who they were. They're still the same people. They're just going through a bad time. But people will look at you like, you know, or them as like, hey, you're not there, you know, like you're not up to the level. It's amazing how we work, but, you know, as humans, but it is a big problem, because I think it affects people and how they're almost like stressing out for things that they don't have to. Am I getting that right, or I'm missing?
Yeah, no, Hurricane, those points that you made are totally right. There has always been a nobility class that tries to set itself apart by showing that they're more significant than other people. And yet, all of us are human beings with intrinsic worth. And that's one of the amazing things about our humanity. You can look at somebody who is down and out as far as our society is concerned, and yet you know that they are a human being that have had unique experiences and have unique talents, okay, and have unique knowledges that can and probably has contributed to the world in some way, because we are all together trying to get through this thing called life.
All right. Well, Doctor, thank you so much. You know, we've exceeded an hour, and so I guess my system wanted to just close the show. So that. Well, you know what it is? I had it already scheduled, so it automatically, you know, kind of not yet. We're still good here. We're still having a quick discussion. Thank you so much, Doctor, for the time, as always, for sharing those insights. And these little things, I mean, they're not little, they're huge concepts, and you know, it takes time. And sometimes these shows, you really, even me, I literally look them up and listen to them and watch them over and over and absorb the stuff myself. Of course, I do it. There's a reason also I do it for me, just to see how I did on the show. But also I really, you know, get that information and kind of readjust it and register it again and figure out how I can use it for life, you know, in person. And I think if you're watching, folks, or listening, this is something that really going to benefit you somehow. I mean, yes, we are answering questions. Doctor is answering questions that are coming in from folks that are from all over the world. And these are life questions that people feel somewhat, you know, in need of an answer because they need to figure out how to operate in the real world. So life is difficult. And I think, Doctor, you are making a difference, as always, helping people and guiding people a little bit to a better way of handling things. And so that's always huge. So, Doctor, thank you so much for another, you know, great discussion, a lot of great insights here. Much appreciated, as always.
Thanks very much, Hurricane. It's a pleasure, as always. All right. We'll see you again.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, say that again, Doctor.
See you again next month.
End of the month. This is the last Friday of every month, you know, so stay tuned for the next Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Heim, live all the way from the land down under. So with the one and only Dr. Heim. All right. That being said, I'm Hurricane H. Hope you enjoyed this discussion. We'll be talking soon, new day, new show and topic, or to the next Climb next month. Bye for now.